clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us on SST, on Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, or on YouTube, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. And if you'd like to watch along on podcast, don't forget you can now watch on Spotify as well. And of course, you can watch on YouTube. If you like what you've been hearing, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your podcast app. Subscribe, hit the notification bell on YouTube, drop a comment, and hit the follow on social media at Subway Sports Talk, X, Instagram, TikTok. And you'll find all our picks there. You'll find all of our good stuff right there on Subway Sports Talk social media. And today, I'm riding solo for a New York Minute. And if you're unfamiliar with the New York Minute, it ain't just a minute, all right? It's going to take a little while because that's how it be out here in New York. And we got some good stuff to talk about. And that includes the New York Knicks and this in-season tournament that I'd like to get some takes off on. We're going to talk about the New York Giants and their resurgence. I don't know what to call it, but we will break it down and what that means for them moving forward into this whole drafting situation and the rest of the season with Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones. And then we'll give some quick thoughts on the Jets after their debacle of a loss against the Miami Dolphins last Friday. It feels like a long time ago already, the blessing and the curse of being, you know, getting that game on a Friday after Thanksgiving. It wasn't prime time on Thanksgiving. A lot of people watched it on Friday. Jets fans were pissed. It was pathetic. All that is true. However, you know, by Monday, people kind of moved on and we didn't have to relive the misery that was that Jets game on Friday, on Black Friday. So I'll talk about the Jets, talk about the Giants, and we'll talk about the Knicks and this in-season tournament, which is exactly where we will start. And I'm going to start first with this in-season tournament and move on to the Knicks specifically, because I really do have some thoughts about this in-season tournament here that I find pretty interesting, and I'm not sure what the general consensus is at this point in time about this tournament and what it means and how it feels and the impact and the success or lack thereof with everything around it, right? But to me, the in-season tournament for the NBA is quite the simple proposition. They were looking to add some intrigue to the regular season. They were looking to add something that could add some juice and some care for fans and players alike, something that would happen in this early portion of the season where they are very much competing with the NFL. Earlier on in the season, at the beginning, they're competing with MLB playoffs, which wasn't much competition this year, if you ask me, even though obviously if you're a baseball fan, you might find it exciting. But from an overall perspective, it's not like they're worried about the end of baseball for the start of the NBA. They're worried about football. They're worried about them taking the lion's share of attention from the sports fan world. And the NBA was looking to combat that in any way possible. So what do they do? And they're obviously modeling this somewhat around some of the European soccer cups. Obviously, it's not quite the Champions League, as that takes the top tier from each of the big leagues in Europe, but it's similar to like a Carabao Cup or the Europa, things of that nature that maybe, well, Europa is probably more similar to the Champions League, but you get the gist, right? They're trying to take some of these teams that maybe know they won't be competing for the NBA finals and give them something to play for, give them some incentive. Obviously, this being cash in this particular case, it's $500,000 to each winning player. And you get this standalone tournament after all these in-season tournament, regular season games or lead-up games, play-in games, if you want to call them that. Then you get the two standalone, the semifinals and the finals that will be, you know, moments in this NBA season. And will they last forever? Will they be things we talk about once we get towards the summer and the NBA playoffs and NBA finals? Perhaps not. But the overall idea of this to me, whether it's been a rousing success or a failure, which I don't think it has been, is really obvious and it's really simple, right? The NBA wanted to add some sort of juice to the regular season. So in my opinion, this is a success if they're able to add any percentage points of intrigue, care, and energy around this in-season tournament. And if you've watched at all, I know I've felt this way when I'm watching these in-season tournament games, I am finding that there's a little bit more juice. And is it just because of these new courts? Is it because of these new alternate jerseys? I don't think that's the only reason, but I think there was some sort of subliminal messaging that's taken place with these courts, that when you turn on an NBA game and you're seeing the Knicks play on this court with a large blue stripe down the middle, you're like, all right, something's different here. And the energy is pretty good for many NBA games in the regular season, especially in stadiums like Madison Square Garden, of course, right? But when you're watching these games, I've been feeling a little extra juice. And I think players are feeling it too. And is it subliminal or not? I'm not 100% sure yet. But back to the point of the NBA, looking to add any percentage point of positivity through this tournament, I think it's hard to deny that this is a good idea. And it's hard to deny that it's been a success to this point. And again, I'm not trying to make it seem like, oh my gosh, look at the NBA. This in-season tournament is changing the game. I don't think it's there yet. I think it's going to take some time and some history around this tournament to create those moments, to create that long-term, that long-lasting juice and energy around of it. But just watching the Knicks, even if you're local and only watch the Knicks and don't watch the NBA at large, I think you might feel what I'm talking about. You might feel that little extra juice in the stadium when you're watching this game. And it's also been obvious to me that the players do care about this, even if why they care is unknown to this point. We've heard Damian Lillard talk about this already, that $500,000 may not be life-changing for him, but he knows that that is life-changing for number 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 on his roster, who that might double their salary for the year. Not quite, because the minimum is more than 500, but you get the idea. The players are aware the impact that that money can have on the entire team, okay? So even if LeBron and Dame and KD and Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle aren't worried about that $500,000, I'll tell you one thing, they want it, they like it, they would be pleased if they ended up with an extra $500K this year. Well, why would you not be? It's still a lot of money. Right. So that's obvious to me. That's one reason why there's some more energy. The second reason is a little bit more subjective at this point, and it's a little bit more gray than black and white. But these players in the NBA are competitors. They've been competing for a long time. They've been competing at the highest level of basketball in the NBA every single night. And to have that little extra juice, it shows. And their competition comes out to the point where you're seeing players be conscious of point differential, right? Because obviously that is a big reason of how certain teams are going to make it into this true playoff or tournament time out of the group stage into the actual in-season tournament. You have to either win your group or make it via wild card by having a point differential. It happened in the first game of the tournament. The Philadelphia 76ers were playing, and Joel Embiid, who the Sixers were up big at the moment, is still shooting three-pointers with time running down. And people first got mad. They were like, whoa, what are you running up the score for? What are you doing right now? And Joel Embiid, from game one of the in-season tournament, had an awareness that that point differential can help them out and put them in this tournament. To me, that set the tone right there. Oh, players are aware. They understand how this works. They understand what they have to do to get to the place where they actually want to be, right? And to me, another important point is these games are not new. They are replacements of regular season games. They are regular season games, right? So these games do count towards their overall standings. Their game are four games of their 82-game season. So it matters at minimum. The same exact amount as a normal regular season game would have in 2022, 2012, 1994, doesn't matter, right? So the loss from this tournament to me is basically non-existent. There's no chance you're going to lose out from doing this in-season tournament because there's all this extra stuff, all this extra games. Now we're putting more wear and tear on a league where players don't like to play all the time anyway. That's not the case, right? And then players like Embiid, and then it happened more obviously throughout the rest of the in-season tournament group games, they were aware of point differential. If you watch this Knicks game against the Hornets on Tuesday night, which just ended up a little while before I started recording, they knew they had to win big. They didn't think that they could just roll into Charlotte, or they're in New York, but roll up against Charlotte and just win by four, win by six, and call it a day and make the tournament. They knew they had to take care of business. And what do they do? When the game got a little close at the end of the third quarter, the Knicks put their foot on the gas and they won that game by 24 points. Like, it was obvious that they had a care to not just win that game, not just to check a box, but to make sure that they took care of business enough to make it to the next stage. And they did. So the Knicks made it to the next stage, and that's exciting. So now let's talk about what this means as a Knicks fan. Does this mean that if the Knicks make a run and win this in-season tournament, all of us New Yorkers are going to be out here bragging, oh, yo, the Knicks in-season tournament champs? We know that we can't do that because everyone around the league will say, oh, so what? You won the in-season tournament. Who cares? We'll see what you do in the playoffs, right? The Houston Rockets are about to make this in-season tournament. They haven't yet, but they have a chance. So I think fans are smart enough to realize that. Like, you're not going to go brag to the entire NBA, yeah, but the Knicks won the in-season tournament, so they're basically the same as the finals champions. Like, no, we're not thinking that. And if you think that that's what this is, you're mistaken. You are the one who has your values and expectations improperly set up. But it's obvious that the players have some care about this and want to make it to the next stage. And from a Knicks fan perspective, or from whatever fan of a team that you are, that is in this next stage of the in-season tournament, you get something that's actually valuable. You get to see your team in a do-or-die situation where they will care, where the competitive nature will come out, and they will want to continue to advance. So the way it worked is that four people from the West, four teams from the East make this tournament. There's three groups in each and one wild card. The Knicks got that wild card because they were aware and cared enough to keep that point differential at a high margin. They had the second highest point differential in the Eastern Conference, just behind the Milwaukee Bucks, who were the group winner. They had an average of 11.5. The Knicks had an average of 10.5. That was the second highest, higher than the Celtics, higher than the Magic, higher than the Pacers, who were 4-0. So the Knicks had very much an awareness to do what had to be done to make it to this next stage. And now they're going to be in this do or die situation, playing in the next part of the tournament. And you get to now evaluate your team on a different playing field. And no matter how you skin the cat, again, this isn't much extra from the regular season. Most of these games are all counting as regular season games. The only games that don't are the final two, the semifinals, and the finals of the in-season tournament. But you get to watch Brunson and Randall and Grimes and Robinson and Barrett and et cetera play a game against the likes of the Milwaukee Bucks, the Boston Celtics, the Indiana Pacers, who are the winners of Group A, who have been a very good team and a surprisingly good team who just puts up absolute buckets this year, right? So you watch now your team, if they made it to the tournament, if you're a Knicks fan, you're watching the Knicks, and you're now measuring what they're doing in this type of atmosphere to prepare them and to see who are the guys who show up, who are the teammates, who are the bench guys who rise to the occasion and really play well in these big moments. Because you can't tell me that an in-season semifinal game or an in-season tournament final game isn't more valuable than game 32 of the regular season in the NBA. It's not true. You've seen it already where there's more energy in these games. And for all these teams that made it in the Western Conference, it's not completely locked in yet because games are going on as I'm recording this podcast. But now you're getting the Lakers in this tournament. You're getting possibly the Kings and the Warriors or the Pelicans and the Rockets, right? Like, the Houston Rockets have a chance to make this tournament. That's kind of what this is for. So if the Houston Rockets, who have been surprisingly good this year, and Alperen Şengün has been showing off so far this year, now all of a sudden you got Rockets versus Lakers in the in-season tournament semifinals or finals or something like that, you're not going to have a little bit more intrigue if you're a fringe NBA fan, if you're a casual fan, if you're a Knicks fan who mostly only watches the Knicks? Even if it's 2% more interest due to this tournament, it's an absolute surefire win for the NBA. It's an absolute surefire win for fans. All they wanted to do is add some extra love and care to a regular season. And now in year one, you're already seeing that come to fruition. You're already seeing that have some sort of fruit, even if you don't think it's a big fruit. Even if you think it's just a little bit of increase, that's still more than they had lately. And now all of a sudden, if you get, let's just say, you get the Lakers versus the Celtics in the first ever in-season tournament final, You don't think that becomes some sort of event? You don't think that has a little bit of something special about it? Because if you got LeBron James going up against Jason Tatum and you got the Lakers versus the Celtics in an in-season tournament final year one, absolute win, slam dunk. And maybe you're the type of NBA fan who you don't really care until maybe the NBA finals, but you know, you're sitting home on a Tuesday night. I don't know when they're going to do it. Maybe a Saturday night. Maybe they'll do it on a Friday night. I'm not sure what day of the week it is. I'm sure I could look it up. But you're sitting at home on a Friday night. You're at a bar on a Friday night, and you got Lakers Celtics. You ain't throwing a wager on that. You ain't tapping in to Celtics Lakers in-season tournament final. I think I know I am, right? Like I'm watching Pelicans Warriors on a Tuesday. So I'm different. I know that. I'm not trying to act like everyone needs to be this big level NBA fan. But I think once we understand how this group stage went through and how the tournament stage actually takes place and what it's going to look like, what it's going to feel like, to me, it's just such an obvious win. It really is a surefire no-brainer. And I think it took everyone from hardcore NBA fans to the least bit of a fan, like the very, very minor NBA fan, took us a little bit to really figure out what the heck this was and what it was going to look and feel like and be like. But now that we're here, man, NBA, kudos to you. I think this is the right stuff. I think this is a good attempt, and you adjust and you make it a little bit better next year. And now all of a sudden, if we're looking at the year 2030 and we have some data that maybe, you know, three of the last six champions have been in the in-season tournament finals. Like, that's showing something. That's proving that the best teams are showing up for this. And one last thing on the at-large NBA stuff here, the one thing I still hear from friends and people online about the NBA that they don't love is that they don't play defense, they whine all the time, they don't care about the regular season. I watch a lot of NBA. I watch a lot of players and a lot of teams who care every single game. A lot of teams that play defense every single game. And yeah, defense may not look like it did in 2005 when offense was in the mud in the NBA, when it was clogged up and people weren't shooting well or enough. So defense doesn't look like it used to be. And hand checking obviously went away. That does not mean that they're not playing defense. I challenge you to watch a Knicks game and ask yourself if they're playing defense. It may not be your father's Knicks. It may not be your uncle's Knicks from the 90s, right? But the way that defense is played, though different, is probably harder today than it was back then and is still treated with much effort night in, night out, 82 games. Go watch what Mitchell Robinson does for the Knicks every single night he plays, which has been every game so far this year, right? He'll maybe miss one or two. He is grinding on the boards. He is affecting shots at the rim. Go watch Emmanuel Quickly check the best guard on the team after he comes in off the bench. Watch Brunson take four charges a game. So if defense is your issue, I guess I can say that I get why you say that. I don't agree with it. I'm telling you why. But when you're watching these in-season tournament games, and when you're watching the next stage on the actual knockout rounds here, you're going to see that playoff level intensity because you're already seeing it. If you're seeing it now, you're going to see it at the next step. You're going to see it when you get the Bucks and the Celtics, or the Knicks and the Celtics, or the Lakers and the Warriors facing off, and LeBron and Steph are battling and have 32 points in the fourth quarter, and it's a four-point game, right? So from the defense side, maybe that wasn't the best argument, but if that's your thing, I promise you they play defense in the NBA today, and they're definitely playing it in this tournament. And if you think the players don't care, again, try this out. Watch the tournament. See if they care, because they do. If they didn't, you wouldn't have the plethora of young talent in the NBA showing up night in, night out, putting up crazy stats, impressive shots from the outside, from the inside, dunks. Like, you got to think about the players in the NBA right now. I'm going to roll through some guys who are in their early to mid-20s who you may not be that familiar with, who are household names that are going to be fighting and clawing for all-star spots, for all NBA spots. And there will be more snubs this year than we've seen in a long time. And snubs kind of bothers me because I always say, if you call someone a snub, they should have been an all-star. Who you taking off? Well, this year, it's going to be insane. All right? I'm going to run through just team by team really quick. Halliburton on the Pacers. Tyrese Halliburton, monster. Passing is insane. His shot making has gone up a whole nother level. He's leading one of the best offenses in the NBA in Indiana, and they play at a crazy pace. It's insane. Halliburton's a monster. You get Cleveland, you got Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and young and upcomer Evan Mobley, who's not quite an All-NBA guy yet, but he's in that similar ilk or on that path. Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey has taken a leap this year, putting up gaudy numbers at a monster pace, dominating everyone he plays. Trae Young in Atlanta, Cade Cunningham doing his thing back for a full season now in Detroit. Obviously, Giannis and Dame Lillard in Milwaukee. Brunson, Barrett, Randall in New York, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. LaMelo Ball just got hurt, but he's been going off. This is just Eastern Conference. I ain't not even done yet. Tatum Brown, Drew Holiday in Boston. Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, Cole Anthony going crazy in Orlando. Orlando's one of the best teams in the league this year. Right? Are you seeing this? Are you feeling? Do you hear about these players? Right? LeBron and AD. Booker and KD, Lauri Markkanen in Utah. You got Zion playing basketball again, doing well again. Alperen Şengün, I mentioned him earlier in Houston, monster. Nikola Jokic, still the MVP frontrunner, monster. Luka Doncic playing the best basketball of his career. Kyrie Irving not causing issues in Dallas. The Kings are one of the most exciting teams. Anthony Edwards is a monster. He is a future top three player in the NBA, and he's probably top 10 right now, but there's probably 18 top 10 players in the NBA right now. Because I haven't even mentioned the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a beast. Beast. Steph Curry in Oklahoma and Golden State playing off the charts basketball. Like, there are so many talented players in the league right now. So many. And this tournament is just one more way to let them shine, to let them show out with that 3 to 5 to 10% more intrigue, more viewership, more eyeballs, more conversations around what they do. NBA in-season tournament is a thumbs up from me, if you couldn't tell already. Let's talk about the Knicks real quick, though. Just really quick. I don't want to go too long here, but I'm already going long, so it is what it is. We're here on a Tuesday night recording this. Kennedy Subway Sports Talk. You know where to find us. Obviously, if you're listening to me say these words, don't forget to follow us on social media. But from the Knicks' perspective, I just want to talk about how they're kind of getting things going in the right direction right now. And it's been pretty damn fun to watch. So I did a solo podcast a couple weeks back, and I really focused on Julius Randle. I really wanted to kind of wrap our heads around his slow start, what it meant for the Knicks today, what it meant for the Knicks moving forward, and for all the fans who are clamoring to move on from Julius Randle. I made it pretty clear that I thought that they should be given some time, or he should be given some time, because he's not going to keep shooting the way he was shooting and scoring at the numbers he was scoring. And look what he's been doing. He's been going off. He's back in the high mid-20s. He's averaging over 5 assists a game. He's rebounding like a monster. He's playing team basketball. Randle's been great. And that's with Brunson and Quickley continuing to play pretty well. Brunson's the leading scorer. He's at 25 points per game right now with 6 assists. It's just continuing right where he left off last year, continuing to be the mainstay in this offense, Quickley continuing to be the mainstay off the bench, just getting the shot going. The percentages are going up. He's gotten hot the last couple games in a row, and this team is starting to make sense. But one guy who really deserves a shout-out, who I haven't given much shout-out this year, because once I said haven't given much shout out, that rules out Mitch Robinson, who I might get to in a minute. I've been giving him plenty of shout outs. RJ Barrett has put it together this year. RJ Barrett is now not being joked about as being a consolation prize after Zion Williamson and John Morant. He is attacking the rim great. He is shooting the ball well. RJ Barrett, who has missed a couple games due to injury, right now is shooting the ball 45% from three. And one of his bigger issues has been finishing at the rim, but right now he's got an effective field goal percentage right towards the top of the team. Only a 2% behind Jalen Brunson, right behind Emmanuel Quickley by 1%, right similar with Quentin Grimes, who's obviously a pretty damn good shooter. RJ Barrett, at high volume, taking 15 shots a game, is shooting 45% from three. Well, he's not taking 15 threes, obviously, but 15 shots a game, 45% from the field, 45% from three, shooting the ball damn well, attacking the rim, averaging 19 points a game. The Knicks are looking like who we thought they were going to be. They had a little bit of a clunky start. They hadn't had a ton of big wins early in the season. They really lost a lot of those games against the marquee talent throughout the first portion of their schedule. That's facts. You know, they lost one to the Cavs where they split a home and home. They lost a good game to the Bucks. They lost to the Celtics twice already this year. You know, they lost to the Timberwolves and the Suns. Those are some tough losses, but they had a big win against the Heat last Friday. They've played well against the Atlanta Hawks with a big win there. They've beaten the Clippers when they had right after the James Harden trade. So the Knicks are starting to put it together. They're starting to look like who we thought they were going to be. They sit at 10-7 right now, and they're fifth in the Eastern Conference. Ahead of them is more or less, more being more than less, is ahead of them. The Boston Celtics, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Philadelphia 76ers, and then there's the Orlando Magic. Another team I was just talking about. They're on a 7-game win streak. They're hot. They play great defense. And frankly, the Knicks and the Magic have a lot more in common than maybe we would have expected. The Magic are a little bit younger. They're a little bit more raw offensively right now, but they got some dudes. And Paolo Banchero is legit. Franz Wagner is legit. Jalen Suggs has been a monster. But these are two teams that play serious defense who have some good offensive juice. And some versatility as well. They got guys who move the ball. They got guys who attack the rim. And they got some shooters coming about. Magic are 12-5. Is that going to maintain through the rest of the season? I'm not sure if that's going to maintain. I think they're going to be around. I think they're going to be in the realm of that 4-8 spot in the Eastern Conference. More so in that 6-7-8. But right now the Knicks are right where they need to be. Where they didn't play their best basketball in the first 10 games of the season. They have been playing their best basketball in the prior, you know, 8 games or so in this regular season. Julius Randle's back in the groove. Brunson's continuing to do his thing. This team is a top 4 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they're proving it. And that's even with Quentin Grimes not shooting the ball well lately, with DiVincenzo and Hart kind of trying to figure out exactly when and where they're going to get all their minutes and attack and be efficient and do their thing. Because Josh Hart's been shooting terribly from three. Hit a couple big ones last night. But this team's got depth. This team's got dogs. And this team's got what it takes now to solidify themselves where we thought they could be and should be this season. Right now, with probably a B to B plus grade so far on their full season to date, they are in the 5 seed. They are really close to where they need to be, and they are not even hitting their full stride yet. I have faith in this team. And we're going to talk about the Giants and the Jets in a minute here. And we talked about the Mets and Yankees all summer about how pathetic they were playing baseball. The Knicks, like we often joked, were the most trustworthy team in New York right now. And don't talk to me about the Buffalo Bills, A, because that's not what we're talking about, and B, because they haven't been trustworthy either. The Knicks are taking care of business, man, and I expect them to continue on this path to be better than the Heat, to be right in that realm with the Sixers, to be right in that realm with the Cleveland Cavaliers. 10-7, in-season tournament berth, get the confidence going. Tom Thibodeau built for this. He's built to not take his starters out to get the point differential up. He don't like doing it anyway. Been telling people all offseason. Been telling people in the beginning of this regular season, even though it's football season and it's tough sometimes. If you have a little intrigue in the New York Knicks, man, tap in. They're going to be fun all year, and they're proving that they're going to be consistent for it as well. But all right. Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy. Let's move on. Talk about the football a little bit as well. Because we got some stuff to talk about here. And I want to start off with the New York Giants. Because the New York Giants are between a rock and a hard place, to say the least. A few weeks back, I started talking about the Giants, their schedule, what's going to happen over the rest of their season. It was actually right after the Bills loss. Right after a game where they could have won. They were sitting at a pretty bad record at that point in time. They were 1-4 going to Buffalo to play a game with Tyrod Taylor. And they could have won. Some say they should have won. Some say they at least should have had one more chance to win that game when Darren Waller got dragged down in the end zone and didn't get a flag thrown and they lost the game. They lost 14-9. Defense played pretty well. Defense has played generally well for the most part in this second portion of the season so far. So they went to 1-5, which basically put a big damper on the season. But I came on this podcast and I started talking about what the rest of this season is going to look like for the New York Giants and what could actually happen with them. And this is before, obviously, Daniel Jones went down with the injury. Excuse me. But then what the Giants didn't do, which they did all of last year, is beat teams that they were in theory supposed to beat or very much able to beat. And that's where they really went off. And now, after Daniel Jones gets hurt, and after Tommy DeVito gets embarrassed by not being allowed to throw the ball at the end of the Jets game and playing pretty poorly in his first start, now Tommy DeVito is the talk of the town. Now Tommy DeVito is throwing up the paisan left and right. Now Tommy DeVito's got his receivers and linemen and Saquon Barkley all aligned, pushing forward, trying to win football games. Just when it became seemingly okay for us Giants fans to look towards a possible future, to look towards a draft pick, to start pulling up tankathon.com to see where the Giants are going to land in this draft order. What do the Giants do? The Giants go ahead after getting demolished by the Raiders and embarrassed by the Cowboys and beat the Commanders to go to 3 wins and beat the New England Patriots to go to 4. Now, if you remember that podcast that I was talking about a minute ago, I went through the Giants schedule after that Bills game. And I said, I know they're down and out. I know they're 1-5 and the playoffs seem like a pipe dream. And I wasn't even arguing for the playoffs, but I was arguing for relevant competitive football for the Giants. I said, look at this schedule. Look who they got coming up. They got the Commanders, Jets, Raiders. Tough one against the Cowboys. The Commanders, Patriots, Packers. At that point, they only had one win. I said, I don't think I would be shocked if the Giants somehow end up at 7-8 wins. Some people thought I was crazy. Some friends told me I was talking stupid. And maybe they were right. Or maybe I was right. Because the Giants clearly felt exactly how I described after that Bills game. That they were going to be able to move forward and compete and win some of these games and be in a competitive spot at the end of the season. So what do they do after getting demolished by the Cowboys when everyone who's a Giants fan or just an NFL pundit, analyst, etc., is talking about the Giants tanking and what they're going to do with Daniel Jones with this ACL injury and who's going to be the quarterback next year? Is it worth eating the money? You heard all the conversations. They beat the Commanders. They beat the Patriots. The defense is playing good. Tommy DeVito's throwing touchdown passes more so than any other quarterback in New York this season. And now they go to the Packers at home, Monday Night Football, primetime, Tommy DeVito. Can you picture the chicken cutlets flying through your TV screen on Monday night? Well, actually, they're going there in 2 weeks because they're on bye this week, just for a reminder. But they go play the Packers. They play the Saints, two teams that are undoubtedly beatable. Maybe not by the Giants, but guess what? They are beatable by the Giants. We've seen it happen. We've seen them play decent games this year. They have a little juice right now. They have 4 wins. If all things go super well for the New York Giants and they somehow beat the Packers and somehow beat the Saints, they got the Eagles, they're going to lose. They got the Rams. The Rams very well could be in a playoff hunt, and they'll probably lose that game. The Rams also could be out of a playoff hunt or not have a quarterback if Stafford gets hurt again, or Cooper Kupp can be hurt again, and that game could look a lot different. And then in week 18, the Eagles might just damn well be freaking 16-1 at that point in time and not care. And by no reason of sanity at all, the Giants could mess around and end up with 7 wins. And why do I say it with that tone? Why do I sound upset that my Giants, who I root for, could end up with 7 wins in this season? Because this second half of a season, where the playoffs are now gone, can truly set back the New York Giants and set up other teams to change the outlook of their franchise for the next 5 to 10 years. And that's obviously a little bit hyperbolic because of the success rate on drafting quarterbacks and drafting at the top of the draft in general. But right now, as currently constituted, the Giants sit at number 6 at 4-8 because they own the tiebreaker with the Washington Commanders, who are going down, down, down. And the Giants are apparently on a 2-game win streak going up, up, up. They're tied in the win column with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the New York Jets, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Tennessee Titans. If the Giants mess around and win some games down this stretch, they beat the Saints, they beat the Rams, and they beat the Packers. Maybe they win a game against the Eagles for no reason as well when the Eagles are resting their players for the playoffs. And they mess around and win 7 games. What the hell is going on? They can go from a week 12 truly feasible idea of drafting number 1 or number 2 overall in the NFL draft all the way down to as low as 9 or 10 in this draft. Now, drafting 9 or 10, you can get a great player. That's obvious. You obviously can get a great player at 9 or 10. Maybe you can get an edge rusher or an offensive lineman, which are obviously needs for the Giants anyway, or a cornerback or whatever you want to talk about in that position. Maybe you even feel comfortable taking a quarterback in that spot. But it's clear that there is some big-time talent at the top of this draft. I heard Todd McShay, he called it a 3-diamond player draft. He believes Caleb Williams and Drake May are 2 diamond-level recruits, or not recruits, but prospects at quarterback, and he believes Marvin Harrison will end up with his highest grade since the likes of Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones and Ja'Marr Chase in his NFL draft process and grades and et cetera. So the Giants went from being top 3 to possibly being number 10 in this draft. And it's weird. And it's one of those things that it's hard to root against your team on Sundays. But we all knew what was at stake when they took down the Patriots and that field goal didn't go through. We all now know what's at stake when all of a sudden on Monday Night Football, Tommy DeVito is throwing for 3 touchdowns again against the Green Bay Packers. The stake is large, and it could be a big difference in what the next 10 years is going to look like for the Giants. And Joe Shane, very conveniently, after their win against the Patriots and after Daniel Jones got surgery, decided to say a few words about Daniel Jones and the status of him as the quarterback of the New York Giants moving forward.
With Daniel, he's 5 days off his surgery. He's in there rehabbing right now. He's going to attack it. You guys all know Daniel and his work ethic, probably a guy we're going to have to pull back. But the expectation is when Daniel's healthy that he will be our starting quarterback. Again, we don't have a crystal ball in terms of how the rehab's going to go. Different patients respond differently to these surgeries and, whether it's going to be swelling in the knee or any setbacks. Again, nobody has a crystal ball on this, but that's the expectation moving forward. So,
and wasn't that just convenient? Wasn't that just wonderful timing for Joe Shane that Daniel Jones gets his surgery, the Giants are out of the running for a top 3 pick in the NFL draft, and now it's time to tell us all that they still view Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback of the New York Giants? But did you feel like he was confident? Did you feel like Joe Shane was really riding for his guy that he just paid this offseason? Or did it feel like he kind of took a step back a little bit there by mentioning that this rehab may not go as well as you expect, because he doesn't have a crystal ball. He doesn't know how Daniel Jones is going to react to this rehab and how quickly he'll get back to top status. So he left the door open just a little bit. But he also set the expectation for us fans to not expect any moves at quarterback this year. So to me, what does this sound like? This sounds like the Giants are going to be A-OK going into next season with Tommy DeVito and Tyrod Taylor as their quarterbacks, waiting for Daniel Jones to return in week 7 when they're already 2-5 and not willing to or not able to compete anyway. So you now just waste another year of a Giants season where they have some talent. They have Dexter Lawrence. They have Kayvon Thibodeau on a rookie contract. They still have Saquon Barkley under team control for now. They have Jalin Hyatt on a rookie contract. They have Andrew Thomas. They have Okereke. They got Deontay Banks on a rookie contract. In theory, this is the time to strike for the New York Giants. And what I heard from Joe Shane right there is that they're not ready to strike. They're not ready to make an upgrade on this football team. They either somehow believe that they should be competing right now at the highest level, or they believe it's not possible to compete at the highest level. Both of those realities, to me as a fan and as an unbiased person with a podcast, they're not good enough. Neither of those realities are good enough. Because if you think the Giants are ready to compete at the highest level, that's a problem. The Giants ain't close to the Cowboys, let alone the Eagles. And if you think that you don't want to or are not ready to make those increases to your roster, then what are we doing here with Daniel Jones? Are you willing to just say we're going to punt on another season? Clearly not. You didn't punt on the season where you were 2-7. Or 2-8, I'm sorry. You didn't punt on this season when it was literally being snapped to you in your own end zone where all you had to do was kick it away. Instead, the Giants are competing. The Giants are going to continue to try to win games, which is what happens in the NFL. I'm not saying that tanking happens frequently in the NFL because it really doesn't. Really doesn't. The Bears just won 2. Now, granted, the Bears have that Carolina Panthers pick, but these teams compete. We see it all the time. Unfortunately, with the New York Giants, we see it all the time. That when they have these seasons where the punt is an option for them, no, they decide to run it into the line of scrimmage and turn those tires right down the road with no true signs of improvement, with no true signs of turning this team into a competitor. Do you see the path? I don't see the path. And it really does have something to do with Daniel Jones. I was going to say, and it doesn't have anything to do with Daniel Jones. It does have something to do with Daniel Jones. The fact of the matter is, the guy doesn't throw touchdowns. The fact of the matter is, the guy's coming off an ACL surgery. And even though Kyler Murray looked hella quick in his first game back from his surgery, it doesn't always happen that quickly. So is the plan right now to start next year with Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito and wait for Daniel Jones to come back in week 10 when they're 3-7? Because that's what it looks like to me. And it looks like that to me because they are showing us currently right now that they want to still compete. Are they trying to justify every draft pick now that they finally decided to unleash Jalin Hyatt? That they're trying to show that they did a good job building a defense. That's great, y'all. Wonderful. This team ain't close. And Joe Shane's comments about Daniel Jones being the starter next year, that's him hedging. That's him being hesitant to be aggressive. And maybe their best bet is to kick the tires down the road again another year and wait until the following season to try to revamp their offense and their quarterback situation, because it's been abysmal in 2023. And if that's the case, then why are we competing in 2023 throughout the rest of this season? Probably because tanking doesn't exist that much in the NFL. And maybe that's a problem. And maybe they need to go to a lottery situation, because that will at least cause some balance at that top of the draft. But then again, you see what happened in Houston here. They get the right quarterback and a few little weapons and a coach that seems to make sense down in Houston, and they're competing for a playoff spot. Now, you could probably argue that's where the Giants were 1 year ago, but I think at this point, a year removed, we can all agree that all the Giants were last year were a team that beat up on teams that were under 500, that they were expected to beat, and they had maybe, what, two very high-quality wins last year? Texans aren't doing that, and they are doing it in a very different style, where their quarterback is running and gunning and making plays. And don't tell me that Daniel Jones was doing anything like what C.J. Stroud has done this year. C.J. Stroud's thrown more touchdowns this season, basically, than any other season of Daniel Jones' career, almost already. He might already be over Daniel Jones' highest season, which was his rookie season, for reference. So I don't know what the hell the Giants are doing, man. God damn. You don't want to root for tanking, but sometimes you have to. And just when all of us Giants fans are ready to do so, roll out Tommy DeVito and let's watch the Giants punt away another season of losses and not even getting a good draft pick. I'll see you guys in 2024, week 12. Daniel Jones returns from the ACL injury. The Giants are 3-7 and believe they can make a playoff push. That's insanity. And that's where we're at as Giants fans right now. Let's talk about the Jets real quick. Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy. The Jets, I don't have much to say on this. It's been, you know, it's old news at the moment, but I do feel like it's worth bringing something up about the Jets and what it is really, what my take is on this front is really more of a sadness observation. And it's more along the lines, or it's not more along the lines, it's similar to the Giants situation where they kind of made their own bed and they have to lay in it, right? Like Joe Shane and the Giants signed Daniel Jones and they're now laying in that bed. They made some picks and they just won two games and now they don't have the top pick for next year's draft. So they're laying in that bed talking about how Daniel Jones will be the starter next year when he comes back from injury. If the Giants were sitting at 2-10 instead of 4-8 right now, do you believe that Joe Shane makes that comment? I don't. And I think that little door that he left open at the end of that comment there, he might have left a little more open, right? So now for the Jets, to segue back over, what makes this so tough is that they made their bed with Aaron Rodgers and they're laying in it. And that bed includes Nathaniel Hackett and Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb and Tim Boyle and whoever else you want to drag in from the Aaron Rodgers camp. Nathaniel Hackett should be fired. That's the cold, hard truth that everybody here in New York knows and believes. Have you heard people sticking up for Nathaniel Hackett? Well, not, I shouldn't be talking about people in the Jets organization. Have you heard analysts saying, oh, no, come on. Give Nat Hackett a break. He's doing a good job, right? Have you heard anyone saying, no, you got to give this guy a chance. He's going to really shine when the time is right. You haven't heard it, because what you've seen is pure incompetence from an offense where there's offenses left and right across the NFL moving the ball. You see it from the best teams in the league down to the worst teams. Everyone has bad games, but generally, teams are scoring some points, and teams are getting first downs. And right now, you look at the New York Jets, where plenty of their points have been led by the defense and special teams. They scored 160 points this year. They're hardly averaging 10 points over their last five games. This is all while having an elite defense. Nathaniel Hackett should be fired, but they can't because of Aaron Rodgers. But they really missed their opportunity. And maybe they're just saying, you know what? This season didn't go our way. Maybe Aaron wants to come back. Maybe our defense will carry us all the way through. But they had a chance to do something special with this defense. They had a chance to be a playoff team, obviously. And they had a chance this weekend to fire Nathaniel Hackett and not make it a complete shit show. If they went out on Saturday morning and said Nathaniel Hackett is losing play calling responsibilities or is fired, let go, etc., that's a story on Sunday morning. That's a story that is probably the biggest story on Sunday morning. And then what happens? All the games take place on Sunday and Sunday night and Monday night, all of which were pretty good games, you know, pretty good week of football. And by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where we're sitting right now, do you think the NFL ether is stressing over Nathaniel Hackett at the moment? Maybe they are because of Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Aaron Rodgers goes on the Pat McAfee show and is completely upset and unhinged, and they're just so afraid of that that they won't do it anyway. But basically, they're just saying, we committed to Aaron Rodgers to be our quarterback. And if he doesn't come back this year, which he probably won't, he will be back next year, and we have to just run it through once the way he wants to do it. And to that I say, it's stupid, but I do get it. And for that I say, I'm sorry, Jets fans, that you have to deal with this. Because really, it has been truly irresponsible and truly sad to watch a team be so good on one side of the ball and so incompetent on the other. And just adding insult to their own injuries with things like the Hail Mary, that damn pick six at the end of the half where they got some juice. So maybe this is a punt for the Jets too. But guess where the Jets won't be picking? In the top three or top five. They'll be right there with the Giants picking ninth, getting possibly a good player, possibly a bust, with Aaron Rodgers coming back, and still not a ton of talent that stays healthy on the offensive line. Not a big-time receiver threat outside of Garrett Wilson. And Aaron Rodgers coming back off an injury, one more year older, with Jets fans talking themselves into the idea of being a Super Bowl contender. Man, it's just not fair. Because to believe that the Jets have the right stuff to make this run, either this year or next, with the, you know, this year's pretty much out the window, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. It just doesn't add up. And it's mishandling by head coaches. It's mishandling by organizations. And unfortunately, we learn here that in sports, you make your bed, you have to lay in it. The Giants are laying in the Daniel Jones bed right now, and the Jets are laying in the Aaron Rodgers bed. And to that, this is going on for another year. Both of these franchises are tying themselves to it for right or wrong, which I clearly believe it's not right for the most part. And we're going to see the same story. That's where I'm at with New York football. I expect nothing to change next year. The Jets have a better chance, just God forbid Aaron Rodgers is healthy and looks like Aaron Rodgers. But the Giants, man, I just don't see the stuff that's going to make this thing tick the right way. That's going to be enough change in a positive manner to make next season anything else but another waste, where they're just good enough to have an inkling of a playoff hope and still pick at number 9 or 12 or 10 instead of 1, 2, 3, or 4. The writing's all over this wall. Giants are on a bye. The Jets do play football this week. Who freaking cares? It's just so bad, isn't it? But that's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. It's been a good solo pod here. We'll talk to you at some point with NFL picks. I have a big event at my day job on Thursday night, so my general recording schedule with Pat, Mark, and Cody might be a little off kilter. We'll definitely have our picks out on social media, so please follow us at Subway Sports Talk if we don't get the actual podcast in. because that it might not happen on Thursday night. It won't happen on Thursday night. It might still be out Friday. Maybe it'll come out a day early, but the schedule's looking a little wonky right now. So we'll see. But the picks will be on Subway Sports Talk. Your boy went 2-1 this week. I'm now at 21-14-1 for me this year. Good stuff. We're going to keep it pushing on the picks all the way through the Super Bowl. And as always, shout out to Pat Boyle, Mark Shanlugan, and Cody O'Connor for what they do for this podcast and for making their picks. Mark Shanlugan, he's now four games over 500, I believe. Two games over 500? Yep. No, I don't know. Whatever. 3 games over 500. Cody's like 10 games over 500. He's killing it. Pat Boyle, the caboose at the moment. That's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. We'll talk to you soon. And stay tuned for some picks later in the week. Cheers.